At least it's turning now, so I feel pretty good.
She set you in case I make a mistake or something.
No, I'm not gonna chime in because I don't know it.
Well, this is the only.
Well, I don't know too much. We were married at the time. We was living in South Franklin, but my parents lived down in that area.
Ah.
And your grandmother.
My grandmother.
Where in the area did your parents live?
They lived Sanders? On Miro Street.
Miro. Whereabouts on Miro?
316 Miro Street.
316.
That's almost down where
though. I was trying to think in relation to Corinthian Baptist.
We lived two houses from Corinthian Baptist Church, and later on my mother bought a house, and we lived four houses from Corinthian Baptist.
About what period of time would that have been when?
It was in the 40s.
Oh, okay.
And 50s.
So you weren't actually born on Miro Street?
No, I was born in Clark County.
Ah, yeah. Okay. Okay, when did your family relocate then to Frankfort?
Oh, they came to, I guess they said 4 or 5 weeks after I was born, they moved to Frankfort.
But they didn't go right to that cross section. No. They went to South Frankfort, is that correct?
Let's see, I can't remember, but I think my mother and father lived at 316, that's what it was.
Okay. Well, the reason I'm here is to do really two things, to talk a little bit about the area, Crawl or Bottom, or maybe there was other names that I don't know, and also to talk a little bit about what happened during the relocation process. So let me start just a little bit on Crawl in general. Did the people living in that section of Frankfort, to your knowledge, refer to it as Bottom? Or Craw, or did they have a preference for the what they call the area?
Well, most people that didn't live in the neighborhood, they called it Craw.
Okay.
And Bottom. And many times, you'd be visiting somebody out of town,
mm-hmm.
and they would always say, "How's Craw?" or "How's the Bottom coming along?" or something like that. You know, they've been to Frankfort before.
Mm-hmm. They had a reputation that extended beyond Frankfort. When you talk about that area, what would you say the boundaries? It's sort of fuzzy in my mind, is what area specifically does that include?
Well,
west from the river?
East to the river, okay. To St. Clair Street.
Okay.
And Broadway to Hill Street.
Okay.
They consider that 50 little acres, you know.
It's considered
50 acres.
50 acres.
Yeah.
Okay. As far as let me back up just a little bit. And your parents, you say, lived on Miro Street in the 40s. Okay. Can you describe the home? Do you remember very much about it?
Well, we lived at two locations. The first house my parents lived in was a duplex.
Okay.
And we lived downstairs, and my grandfather lived upstairs.
Did you all have, like, running water and inside facilities and furnace and all that in the building? Do you remember?
No, we didn't have no furnace, but we had running water. And we had an outside toilet, but later on we got an inside toilet.
Did you all own the property?
No, we didn't. We rented.
Okay. Do you remember who the owners were offhand? That's a long time ago. That's really not a fair question.
I can't remember right offhand.
Okay. All right. What condition was the building in? Was it pretty well kept up by the owners, or?
It was well kept up. Yeah.
Uh-huh. Well, you get the impression from these articles that all the houses were ramshackle, but what I'm hearing you say is there were houses that were well taken care of.
There was houses down there that were well taken care of, but just like any other neighborhood, you know, some of them were run down and probably needed work and everything like that, but. In general, it was a nice location for the people. You know, people didn't realize they was living in a ghetto or living in the slums at that time. But the thing about living down in Crawl, it was a nice place to live, you know. You didn't have to lock no windows or close no doors or anything like that at night.
Well, that's one of the things I wanted to talk to you a little bit about. Did people chose to live there, in other words, because it was either the best that they could get, or?
It was probably the best that they could afford.
Okay.
You know, at that time, the black people didn't have too good. comfortable jobs, I would say.
Mm-hmm.
I'd say the distillery was the best paying job at that time.
Those that did work, were most of them at the distillery, or did they work at any one particular place, most of those who did manage to have a job?
Well, a few of them worked at the distillery, and at the distillery they were considered probably as laborers,
mm-hmm.
you know. And at that time, I remember my father, he worked at the Capitol Hotel as a waiter.
Did your mama have to work too?
My mother worked, yes, she worked in the Providence family in South Franklin.
Oh, for a particular family?
A particular family.
Oh, okay. Were most of the residents black in the community, or were they white, or was it integrated, or how was the mix of?
Well, most of the people, I would say, were blacks.
Okay.
But they did have a few whites living in the
neighborhood. So were most of the blacks in Frankfort living in that section?
No, that was considered North Frankfort.
Okay.
And over here in South Frankfort, had a large number of blacks living in South Frankfort.
Oh,
here.
At that time
at
as
that
well.
Time.
Okay, a whole separate community. Were the communities, I guess, on a par economically, or was it South Frankfort considered sort of you'd made it if you got to South Frankfort in the black?
No, I wouldn't say that. It's just the location.
Okay.
Probably where a house was available and somebody was getting married, and here was the house available, yeah. They moved into the house.
So there wasn't any stigma amongst the blacks living here in Frankfort about living in Craw or living in South Frankfort. It's just wherever you could
afford a house.
Were most of the, when you all were living there in the 40s, did families tend to live there for long periods of time, or was there a lot of turnover, new people coming in all the time?
I would say most of the people lived there for a long time, mm-hmm. Because they had a lot of elderly people.
Who had lived there?
They lived there for years and years and years.
So long tenure or long periods of residency were not uncommon, is that?
No.
Okay. I've sort of made a list of some of the businesses and neighborhood spots that might spark a memory, or maybe there's some I won't mention that you want to. So. Let me just run through this list and you stop me if you have a particular memory. The Mayo Underwood School.
The blacks.
Did you attend?
I attended. My wife did too.
I've never seen a picture of it or heard it described. Can you describe the school?
Well, the school was on the corner of Wilkson and Miro Street.
Okay. Was it brick or?
It was a brick, kind of a large school at that time. It was built, I think it opened up in the 30s.
Like grades 1 through 12?
1 through 12.
Okay. Black teachers, white teachers?
Black teachers.
Black principal?
Black principal.
Who was principal at the time you were going through? Do you remember?
Professor Blyton.
Blyton?
Blyton.
Brighton.
Okay. Blyton.
Okay. I know, I've heard a lot of blacks talk about Mayo Underwood with a lot of a positive sense, that it was a good school.
It was a good school.
They had a good education from there. What about Corinthian Baptist Church?
It was on Miro Street.
Did you all attend Corinthian?
I attended the First Baptist.
Ah, over in Clinton.
On Clinton Street.
Have you heard of the People's Pharmacy in the old Oddfellows building? It was a three-story cut stone building over on Washington Street.
Yes.
I don't think the pharmacy was in there in the 40s. Do you remember the building?
I remember the building, but I don't remember the pharmacy.
What was in it? Do you remember?
I remember it was a black dentist by the name of Dr. Gay.
That's the first time I've heard. Now, we spoke about Dr. Holmes. I didn't realize there was a dentist down
there.
Yeah,
they had a dentist there. His name was Dr. Gay.
What about Tiger Inn?
Tiger Inn was a local place where, while attending the school, you know, you had a chance to go in and get something to eat
mm-hmm.
at lunchtime, and it stayed open quite late to 12 or something like that.
So really, it was a safe spot for neighborhood kids to grab a meal or listen to a jukebox or something. Can you describe it to me, what it sort of looked
like? Well, it was on the corner of Miro and Washington Street.
Okay.
is the upstairs and downstairs. The man that ran the place was named was Ewan Atkins.
Okay. Was he black?
He was black.
Okay. What was upstairs?
They rented out. It was a family that lived upstairs.
Okay. They just had booze and things like that downstairs?
Had booze, you know, a jukebox.
Well, let me ask, there's a number of other places that were sort of tippling houses. The Blue Moon.
The Blue Moon was a white place.
Okay. Who owned that? Do you remember?
I really don't know.
Where was it in that? That's one thing I haven't really pinned.
I think Blue Moon was on Washington Street.
Okay. Had you ever gone in it?
No.
No, yeah, it was not a place. Was that not a place that blacks...
No, at that time, you know, you might have went there for a beer. You know, somebody, you know. I was probably too young to go in at that time anyway.
Oh, you'd probably got a whooping if you...
Yeah, yes.
What about Tiptoe Inn? Do you remember Tiptoe?
Tiptoe Inn was a white place
too. Uh-huh. Peachtree Inn.
Peachtree was a white place.
That's interesting because... When I hear people talk about Craw, they mention those places, but they were not, apparently from what I'm hearing you saying, blacks either visited them infrequently or they didn't particularly patronize those places. Is that what I'm...
They just didn't patronize those places.
What about Rob's funeral home?
Rob's funeral home was on the corner of Clinton...
St. Clair?
And St. Clair. A local business.
Now that was a black-owned business.
It was black-owned.
Uh-huh. Is it Jack Robb?
Jack Robb and his father.
Yeah.
His father died. When his father died, he took over.
Mm-hmm. And that had been there for a pretty good long time.
It's been there for a long time.
Yeah. That's what I thought. And they, after the blacks were relocated...
I have a picture of that. I'll show you.
Oh, really? I'd like to see that before we go tonight. Do you recall any of the black-owned businesses that you have memories of that I haven't mentioned, some places?
The only black-owned business I could think of, like I said, was Dr. Gay, was a dentist. Dr. Underwood, he was a local doctor.
Mm-hmm.
Jackson Robb, funeral home.
Mm-hmm.
Tiger Inn.
Mm-hmm.
It's probably the
ones
I can remember.
Let me ask you, when you think about back to that period and you think about the African American community that was down there and the whites too, who were the leaders in the community, the people that you could turn to for help or had political clout? Do any names just sort of leap to the front of, I know I'm being sort of vague, you know, I wrote down some names like Dr. B.T. Holmes and Alice Simpson, James Berry, John Buckner. These were people I knew that fought the relocation, but there may have been others down there. Will Castleman.
Will Castleman, yes.
What's the story? Papa Jazz mentions him as being a force in politics. I don't know anything about him.
Well, he was a man that lived down that area at the time. And when politicians came around, they would always go to him to try to get the black, for him to swing the black votes.
How would he swing the votes, though? I mean, what?
Well, all he would do, he was a popular man down there. He would just probably tell them, you know, this is my man, would you vote for him, something like that.
But he could get the votes out.
He could get the votes out, you know.
Ah, okay. And, well, he's not, is he with us anymore?
No.
He's gone too.
Been gone.
Long time. Do you have any memories of the Reverend James Richardson at St. John's AME or the Reverend W.R. Hutchison at First Baptist?
Reverend Hutchison was my pastor at First Baptist.
Ah, okay. He was a vocal opponent of the relocation program. I remember that. I've seen several quotes on his part. As a matter of fact, all the church leaders, the black church leaders, were opposed.
They were opposed, but they couldn't do nothing. You know, they didn't have enough to fight with. You know.
Any political clout to counter what was going on. Well, let me go on just a little bit here. I've heard that, well, Craw is an area that's a lot of times associated with violence or crime or prostitution or gambling. But yet earlier you said that you didn't have to lock your doors or your windows. I mean,
at that time, yeah, I remember a lady by the name of Miss Matt Harden. She was the type of lady that would go visit people late at night, mm-hmm. Go help somebody who was sick. Yeah. And many times I would hear her talk about she could walk through the bottom, and when she got to the bottom, she was safe. She didn't have to worry. She got to the bottom, she was safe. She didn't have to worry about nothing. You know.
The reverse of what everybody else says. Yeah, don't go through the bottom.
No, she said when she got to the bottom, everything was all right.
So as far as maybe the black community, Crawl wasn't any more violent than any other area, maybe less violent than being in some...
Quite ever so often you might hear somebody getting shot. Mm-hmm. Or stabbing or something like that. But that's in all communities now. But it wasn't as bad as people thought it was at the bottom.
Why wasn't it? Was there a sense of neighborliness or?
Well, sometimes not local people, but people out of town brought a whole lot of violence into the Crawl.
They came there to get liquored up or to
probably get liquor, to fool around with those restaurants and joints, yeah, and things like that.
And so they brought the trouble with them. And
some of them did, but some of them was local at that time. You know.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's one of the things that Mike Fields tells me. He says, if you get down around some of the joints now, the Blue Moon or Peachtree or Tiptoe, you could find violence, because maybe for the very reason that you're saying, others were coming into the community. But he said most of our area, which he was over on Blanton, there was no problem with it.
There was no problem.
Did the police provide adequate law enforcement for the residents in the area, or did you all see the policemen?
The police rode by quite often. Okay. They was always down there. Yeah.
Any problem with flooding? I've heard that a lot of times Craw and Bottom was one of the first areas to get inundated whenever there was a flood. Did you experience any of that?
Yes, I was living down at the time when they had the big flood of 37. My parents were living on Mirror Street.
Mm-hmm.
And the water always came up in the sewers around Clinton and Washington and Mirror and Washington. The water would start coming up right, mm-hmm, those sewers. And it just started spreading and spreading and spreading. But that flood wall, you know, they talk about the flood wall now.
Yeah.
In 1940s, they was talking about the flood wall. You know, I see articles in the State Journal sometimes 50 years ago.
Yes.
$50,000 was allotted to the city of Franklin for a study of flood wall.
Mm-hmm.
That's 50 years ago, man. I guess another 50 years, they'll still be talking about it. Yeah.
Well, did the families in the area get adequate assistance to relocate during the flood? I mean, did you all have to move out?
Yeah, we had to move out.
Where did y'all?
We moved over to South Franklin.
Okay.
My mother's auntie lived up here on Mary Street, mm-hmm, and we stayed over there for a few days until, okay, the water went down.
Okay, you had to take out all your belongings and furniture and all,
yeah,
that?
Yeah, a lot of people lost a lot of belongings and furniture at that time.
And that's sort of, in the back of my mind, one of the suspicions about the condition of the housing is it's hard enough to keep a house up anyway, but you get inundated by floods every other year, and of course the, yeah, condition of the housing is going to be bad. Let me get on to a different subject here a little bit about the origins and the impact of the urban renewal project on North Frankfort. Do you know where the idea came from to have the urban renewal project? You know, where it originated? Was it the white business community? Was it some outsider? I have yet to find out what the source of the idea was for having urban renewal come to this area of Frankfort. I really don't know. Do you remember when you first heard about the slum clearance project, or how you heard about it?
Well, I think it was in the paper that they were going to have a meeting at Mayor Underwood High School.
public meeting?
A public meeting.
Do you remember when they had that?
I can't say.
Okay. I've seen some things on meetings in about 58, January, February of 58. They had some meetings, one over at the courthouse.
I don't remember the one at the courthouse, but I do remember the one that mailed on.
Tell me what happened there during the meeting.
Well, they was telling the people that they was going to take their property, that they would be located someplace else. And just like I said, I never will forget this guy named Schaus. He worked for the state at the time. And he was telling the people that once we take this property and clear out all these houses and things, the people would be given will have a chance to build back, to buy back.
Mm-hmm.
But that didn't sound too good at that time, and people didn't believe it.
What was your reaction to the project? I mean, were you?
Well, I was thinking about my parents at that time because I was married.
Okay, you had already left the area and were living.
I was living in South Frankfort.
How did your mom and dad think?
Well, they didn't like it, you know. They had the home paid for and everything like that.
So they had no outstanding debt on their home at all?
No, it was paid for.
Well, in the hearings, did people get a chance to voice their questions or if they were upset, get a chance to sound off? Or at that meeting at Miro Underwood, did the residents pretty much speak out?
Well, some of the people got up and spoke out against it.
Mm-hmm. What kind of issues?
Most of them said, where will we go? Or how much will we get for our property if you buy it?
And were they given adequate answers, or what kind of answers did they?
Well, they probably got answers like, you will get, a certain amount of money.
Mm-hmm.
But I always think that is the wrong saying, as I would say, all kind of, whatever you get is not enough to replace your home. Mm-hmm. I don't care what you get.
Because it has more value than just the wood and nails. There was a petition circulated. I don't know if you'd seen a copy of it, but I believe Mr. Buckner and Ms. Simpson and others got a petition up and circulated it amongst the community members. Do you know if your parents signed off on it? Or it was in opposition to the project, and they got over 253 signatures from residents down in the bottom section opposing the project. Do you remember seeing it or hearing anything about it?
I don't remember seeing it.
Okay. Did your parents take any actions besides attending the meeting at Mayo Underwood? Anything to voice their opinion or to?
No, I don't think they did.
That's one of the things that I was sort of curious, if most of the homeowners felt, or even the tenants felt, like this was a done deal and there was very little that they could do about it. I know that apparently somebody retained two lawyers from Lexington, a Mr. J.S. Carroll and a Mr. Nippenberg, and they helped with the petition and they attended some of the meetings. And I don't know who paid for their services.
I was getting ready to ask you who paid for that service.
I don't know, and that's one of the things I want to find out. If I keep talking to enough people, I want to find that out. Somebody must, unless they volunteered their services. Did your parents feel like they got a fair price for their home, or how did the acquisition of their home work? Do you remember?
I believe they set a price for my parents. They gave them a certain amount of money, but it wasn't enough money to cover the house that they bought later on.
So they had to go back into debt.
They had to go back into debt. Most of the people had to go back into debt. They didn't get enough.
Did people go to court to try and get a better settlement?
No, did nobody go to court. I can't remember anybody going to court at that time.
Yeah, the only condemnation suits where people went to court, there was a family called Weissenberg, which was a Jewish family, and none of their people lived in Bottom, but they were absentee property owners, and they owned lots of property, and they went to court and actually lost money on the deal. Where did your parents relocate to?
They moved in a house on Miro Street, but it was two blocks up.
Ah, okay. Beyond the Salvation Army there on Miro?
Past the Salvation Army.
on toward Home Street.
No, Ed Ever right there where the employment office is.
Yeah.
They bought a house right there.
Oh, okay. And
they moved there, they tore that house down.
Oh, did they have to relocate twice?
Well, at that
when did they tear the house, the second house down?
It was back in the, let's see, 70s, I think.
Oh,
early
okay.
70s.
So there was a pretty good period of lag time in there between they had to relocate from the first time to the second time.
Uh-huh.
Okay. So their house was taken maybe for the parking lot for that?
Yeah, that's what it was.
Okay. Boy, they must have been heartbroken.
It's tough. You know, move twice and then take the house both times. Okay. You know.
Where did they go the second time?
Well, my father passed.
Okay.
Yeah, so my mother was in a nursing home at that time.
Do you know of any of the people that their homes were bought and they rented? Some of the things I've read about is the city would buy the home, okay? But they didn't have no place to relocate the people. So you would pay rent to the city if you were a tenant. Do you know of any of the people who were tenants that rented?
From the city?
From the city, yeah.
I don't remember. I just think the city owned any property at that time.
Well, what they would do is they would go in and buy the property, and if there was supposedly not proper relocation housing to be found, they would allow the tenants to continue living there and pay their rent to the city. And I've seen some newspaper articles that verify that, and I don't know how many families were in those circumstances. And then when they found housing, eventually they would relocate them and then tear down the housing. Do you know of anyone who was evicted from their housing? Or have you heard of any instances of eviction? Do you know if any of the members of the community, the black community, were involved in the planning of the project, or when were they informed? I mean, were they involved early on in the project at all, or they just brought in at the public hearing, so to speak?
I don't remember any blacks being involved at all.
Yeah, see, I've read where the planning phase was totally completed before the public hearings. And in the planning phase, they already determined that A, all the houses were going to come out. B, what was going to go back in there was supposedly a park and a number of other things. But I've never heard of any references of a black person being involved in that planning.
What happened to the park idea?
Well, a couple things. Because they had no flood wall and the area was subject to inundation, they could not get private developers to come in and build the low rent housing that was supposed to come back into the area. They couldn't get...
But what cut out the low rent houses? It wasn't planned that way?
Well, actually it was planned that they were to build low rent housing, 75 units, back in the redevelopment area within the 50 acres in some place. And at one point I heard it talked about it was going to be built close up there to Fort Hill, not where Riverview is now, you know, the 30 units that they have there now, but a little bit around the corner, maybe where Hill Street would have been. And they built Sutherland instead, up behind Kentucky State, Sutherland Terrace.
Yes.
And that's 45 units up there, and that left 30 units which went in at Riverview, down at the base of the hill. But I think what happened is the state came in and got working with the feds about the flood wall, and then once the flood wall got worked out, then the state said, yes, we'll put our office tower, and then the John C. Watts came in, and then the YMCA. And this
and
all
built a flood wall.
And that all took place about fall of 64, early 65. The whole project changed, and the local slum clearance agency had to petition the HUD people to allow the change, because the original plan had none of this. Original plan, as you were telling me, had the people getting their housing back in the same area. Do you remember how the black community reacted when they changed the plans?
Well, a lot of them were upset about that. You know, they thought, sure, since the people had told them that they was going to be able to move back in that area and they was going to build houses for them, a lot of people were upset about that.
Well, the ones that didn't, you know, there was over probably 300-400 families in that area, and they built only 75 units of public housing. So Where did most of those people go? South Frankfort? Did a lot of them come over?
Well, East Main. A lot of them went to East Main.
Just bought private housing that they...
Probably bought houses and rented.
Mm-hmm. And so just scattered out up on the east side of town. Whereabouts on East Main? Was there any particular area?
No particular area, but probably up around Douglas and places like that. Yeah.
Was your family eligible or even interested in public housing? Would your parents have considered that?
No.
Supposedly, there were to be low-interest federal loans made available to the homeowners seeking to buy homes. You could get a 20-year loan with zero down payment for 3% interest. And I need to check that, those exact figures, but very low-interest loans were supposedly available from the federal government. Did your parents get any kind of special loans?
This is the first I've heard of that.
Okay.
My parents, when they bought the second house, they... First federal financed the house.
Okay, but there was no special consideration that you're aware of. Did they get any kind of assistance from the city or from any other source as far as relocation, underwriting the cost of moving or helping with the move? Or do you remember?
No, I helped with most of the moving myself.
So. Okay. Some people did receive payments to relocate, because I've seen relocation fund sheets where they list like $60 to move Miss Follis. Well, Miss Follis had Bixie Mover, which was, Bixie was her own son, and I'm sure he didn't charge her
anything. Uh-huh. As I recall, I was working for the library at that time, and I asked my boss, Miss Willis, could I borrow one of the trucks? And she let me use one of the bookmobiles.
To help move them?
And I moved, me and my father helped to move most of the things.
Did your parents ever indicate to you if they felt like they got a fair price for their home?
No, they didn't. No.
They felt like they did not?
They didn't get a fair price. Most of the people down there didn't get a fair price for the house.
In other words, they were just told, you're going to get this.
You're going to
take it
or leave it.
I think you indicated earlier that you're not aware that many of them went to court to fight it.
They didn't go to court to fight it.
Why?
People at that time, they didn't have no money.
They didn't have money to retain lawyers,
yeah.
Or maybe were unfamiliar.
People, most of the people down there were elderly people. And then what little money they had to live on that day by day.
They just didn't have the resources to fight back.
They just didn't have them.
Do you know how much time passed between the time your parents' home was bought and the time that they found another house and moved?
It didn't take them long
to find
the house.
They were probably an exception to the rule then, because most of what I've read is that people had, a lot of them struggled a long time to find the houses they could afford. Why do you think it was so difficult for these people to find affordable housing? Was there prejudice as far as people not selling houses to blacks, or they just didn't have low-cost housing available, or?
Probably at that time, they didn't have low-cost houses. And I guess most people were just trying to find a house, regardless of where it was. They were trying to find a house.
Did your parents feel like the experience left them economically worse off than they were before, or better off, or?
It was about the same, just about the same.
I know Papa Jazz Barry said that some of the people, the relocation and changing their lives actually worked to their benefit. They got better housing, and some of them did better economically.
But most of them had to go in debt.
So you would say that his experience was the exception, not the rule.
Yeah. especially if you want to own your own home.
Okay.
Most of them had to go in debt.
The black businessmen that you mentioned, the dentist and the doctor and some of the others, did they reestablish their practices or did they quit practicing or do you know?
Well, I think Dr. Holmes died. Dr. Gay moved away. Dr. Holmes relocated over here on the corner of Murray and Third Street.
Did he practice out of his home over at Murray and Third?
No, he had a little office right there. You know.
Right on site without the picture ever leaving your house. He brings a portable copy stand, and I might, if it's not an imposition, make a copy of that.
Yeah.
I have never seen a picture of the Robin Funeral Home.
Yeah, that's it.
Of the people who are left who remember the process of what happened back in the 50s and 60s, is there anyone you could refer me to talk to about it? Anyone that you think would be... have some knowledge of it.
I might know one fella, James Calhoun. Okay. He lives at the end of Murray Street.
Okay. He was down there and went through the
location. I don't know where he lived at that time. I can't recall where he lived at.
Okay.
But get in touch with him. He might be able to tell you some things.
Give me the name again.
James Calhoun.
James Calhoun. Okay. When you think back on what happened, and what stands there today, was the urban renewal process and what happened a good thing, a bad thing, or what do you see as the significance of the outcome of it all?
Well, urban renewal has always meant one thing to me, Negro removal. And my brother always said that when they took the bottom away from the people, and it's less than $1 million to buy up all the houses and everything, and spent $50 million over there today,
mm-hmm.
he said that's a monument to the people of that once lived in the bottom.
I've heard it referred to as a monument in the sense of a tombstone. That it's the death of a community.
Okay, I didn't think of it that way.
Well, this is my personal opinion. I sort of agree with you that it was a neighborhood, that there were human relationships there, and Papa Jazzberry sort of gets at this, that once those people were moved out, those relationships drifted apart and ended, and the sense of community that was there was destroyed by this project. And whether or not you think the project was good or bad, you have to decide is what's there now worth the destruction of that community. And some people will tell you that the people who left got better houses or got better opportunities and got taken out of substandard homes, and that is, some of that's true, I'm sure.
You know what would be good, but it would take a lot of time, if you could follow up the people that lived at a certain house, where did they go to after they left the bottom? Where did they go to after they left that house?
Mm-hmm.
You know, that would be nice, you know. And then maybe you could find out what really happened to the people,
mm-hmm.
you know. Did they enjoy living at this new place? Did they enjoy living at this new apartment? Did they enjoy going in debt?
Well, Mike Fields has told, he's given me the names of four people. There's a John Jackson, I believe, and there was a woman who, I can't think of her name, I don't have it on me with me, that moved to public housing, okay, and stayed in public housing, stayed as soon as they were relocated and have stayed there for the rest of their lives. And those people I want to sit down with and find out how they felt about it. Not just the homeowners, but the people who rented and when they were relocated. I like your idea. What I might do is that list on that map, I might type that up sometime and circulate it around, and people can tell me who's gone on, and I can check them off, but then find out who is living from that list that I can track down and do exactly what you said, see where they went, what did they feel about it. That's the story that never gets told, is the story of the people who live there.
But it's not going to be too many of them.
That's the thing. It's, you know, it's over 30, it's 30 years now. It's hard to believe. See, I was born in 57, and we're talking about things that really happened from about 57 through 72. I think the tower opened in 72 or 3. Well, thank you very much, Mr. Sanders. You give me a lot of your time. I appreciate it very much.
Well, it's glad to help out if I did help out. That's
you did. You did very much so, sir, more than you realize.
I can't get up is you really into this. You know, you got the names and the places and dates and everything.
Well, I don't have them all, and there's many more records. I'd like to look at all the city commission meeting records that deal with this. One of the things you may not know, there was a housing project proposed for black residents of Craw in the 1940s. As a matter of fact, it was 1940. And you know where the post office building is down here, right?
Yes.
Okay. The feds were going to build, I think it was like a 40 to 50 unit housing complex right there where the post office is now. And this was 1940. City Commission, I mean, it was going to be federal money. And the City Commission refused to sign a letter of agreement. It had to have a letter of cooperation between the city and the feds, and refused to sign the letter and kill the project. And I don't know exactly all the reasons why. I think they did not want the black residents that close to what they saw as a maybe future office complex or something like that. But there has been a real mixed history of
But that time, the penitentiary,
it closed now, wasn't it?
Yeah, that closed right after the flood.
Mm-hmm.
And they tore it down and everything, but they still left that gate.
Yeah, the gate was still standing.
Uh-huh.
But that showed me sort of the city commission, when they voted on whether or not to enter into this agreement, after they decided not to, they destroyed the records of that meeting. And I found that, it just shows you that when it comes to housing for the poor or for African Americans or for minorities in general, that's a real politically sensitive topic. Apparently things were said that they did not want the public to know. That's my impression of it. But what I intend to do, I have to have a paper by the end of April, and it won't be the final product. But when I get that done, the people I've talked to, I'll send a copy of the paper to and let you all look at it and see what you think. And,
man, you are really into this. You are really, really.
You almost have to, though, to be any good at it. You have to really be excited about it. I found some old glass plate photographs, and they date back to 1913. They're in the collection of the Historical Society, and apparently the Civic League, and I don't know if that was a state group or a city group or what, the Civic League came down into the bottom and made pictures of the residences, and they don't identify where they are. It's a lot of pictures of wooden buildings. There are some black families standing in front of the building, some white families, and I'm getting copies of those made, and they'll be...
What's the date on it, you say?
About 1913, very early on. There's probably no one left that remembers that, but I hope to have them and the maps and things, and eventually I'd like to convince the Historical Society to do an exhibit on this subject. And I think that would attract the black community to the Historical Society. We have very few black members. And it would also tell us a piece of history that doesn't get told, which is the Kentucky African American story. So if it keeps going good, I hope to keep pushing it. At least I'll get a paper out of it, maybe an article in a historical journal, and then the big thing is an exhibit. Full-size exhibit downtown. But thank
you. What I would like to go over, which is sometime about the people, you know, some people that is living, mm-hmm. and some are dead, you know, on this, on that map. Where
that okay, map here is? It is. Sure, if you want to do that, that's fine. Here, there's two sections, or really three sections of it.
Out of your way.
Now, this fellow George Simmons is still living.
George Simmons?
Yeah,
okay, he's still up.
Yeah. This Betsy Allison is dead. Ernest Ward is dead. Judy Sayre is dead. I think this guy, but I don't know him.
Okay.
Class Bush is dead, Had Bush is dead, George Taylor's dead, he owned the...
He had an auto company, didn't he?
No, he had a liquor.
Oh, a liquor store, yeah, okay. George Taylor, okay.
Charlie Ball, he's dead.
Doolin Moss.
He's dead.
Yeah.
Charlie Ball is dead. Some of these are people I don't know.
That's that Weisenberg group that...
Charlie Ball, John Buckley's dead. Martha Walker's dead. Connie Wells is dead. Judy Sayre. I'm trying to... George Simmons, the only one I know that's living.
Is he, George, still in good health? Am I somebody I could talk to?
Yeah. What does Weisenberg, do they have a lot of property down there?
They had tens of thousands of square feet. They were gone by the 50s. They had scattered out to, there were some in Houston, some in West Virginia, and they're the ones that brought suit about the price of their land. And they eventually got over $50,000 out of their property, so they did all right.
Did you realize that's the oldest man that's living?
Out of probably 50, 60 names, only one left.
These people must own property, because I see this John Buckner,
yeah.
Charlie Ball, they popping up. See, they must own those parcels down there.
Yeah, they did. I intend to go through and count and see who owned the most. Good grief, Charlie Duvall keeps
on. No one. Weisenberg. The most man I know is still living.
So okay, there's another sheet here. We can go through it. Check. This is more of the residential area that you're familiar with, maybe.
So this fellow here is Costello Wolf, but he lived in Texas.
Costello Wolf has moved out of state.
Yeah.
Okay.
This guy Cecil Warren, he lived over on Washington Street in Louisville. He moved into his parents' house right up here. The second house from this house here. But he's dead though.
I didn't realize how elderly the people in that community were.
Oh yeah. See, that's why they couldn't fight them. They didn't have nothing to fight. This fella here, Scott Jameson, he's still living, but he lives in Louisville.
Scott Jameson, okay.
That's my grandfather, one of them.
Ah.
Lived on Hill Street. Robert Williams, he's dead. He's Fanny Feaster, she's still living.
Okay, let me... Fanny Feaster, okay. She would be someone to talk to, maybe.
Yes. This lady is still living, but she's in bad shape. Mm-hmm. School teacher, but she passed. But her sister's still living.
What's her sister's name?
Bertie Samuels.
Bertie? She's
right down the street here.
Bertie Samuels, okay.
this lady's still living, but she wouldn't be able to help. Yeah. That's my mother. Tony Papa. See, did anybody ever tell you about Tony Papa?
No, who was Tony Papa?
And Tony Papa. He lived on the corner of Miro and St. Clair. And he sold ice cream.
Oh, no, I never heard
about
him. Is he Italian?
Yeah, thanks. His daughter's still living on Miro Street.
All right, okay. Is her, you know what her name is by chance?
I don't know her name.
She's on
Miro. But she's still living.
On Miro. Okay. Now, Joe Beecham, he's still alive. He's a white guy. And R.T. Brooks told me to look him up, so there's still some.
It's not too many, bro.
No, there sure isn't. All right, I think this last sheet is just a relief drawing. I don't think there's any names. Check it.
No, it's no names on it.
Shows the project, initial project area. And see, that's the thing, that when they... Like you said to me, when they spoke about the project initially back in the late 50s, they were talking about this.
Uh-huh.
But by the end of the thing, they had expanded it to include a larger area really than what was initially talked about. They took extra parcels.
How'd you get this book?
I found Mike Fields again.
Oh.
Mike Fields helped me find that. It's amazing what was down in that basement, and there's a bunch more down there. If you want to look at it more, that's
mine. No, I saw it. No.
Then there's a picture in here that you might like to see. There it is. I didn't know if you saw that the last time or not. There's Mayo Underwood.
Yeah, I live right down the street here. The tie in was right there.
Ah, okay.
Dr. Holmes.
Go ahead and sit down.
Dr. Holmes is right there. The written church is right along with here.
Yeah, I see the church building.
But I live right along with there. So.
It brings it back.
It brings it back. I cried and I... Let's see.
What's all that on the west side of Wilkeson? Is that... Is it
over here?
Right in here. Right in there. Looks like some kind of industrial site or something.
No, that was used to be a trucking outfit.
Ah,
yeah.
Okay.
So there was a big warehouse right there. Right over there. This year's a railroad track. Look how they marked that thing off to take part of Broadway.
Yeah.
They didn't take it all. They just took part of it.
Yeah. Yeah, and this was the very first appraisal done. There were two others that supposedly the values... Yeah, there's my place. I'm on the second floor of that building right there at the end.
Well, Jack's Rob was right along. He's right over here.
Yeah, he would have been, if he was...
He's at
St. Clair
and
Clinton.
St. Clair and Clinton.
So Clinton runs right behind us. He would have been right
along
there.
With it.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, there's the model laundry building right there, Mr. Peeper's building.
Yeah.
Sneak.
You know, the brothers that own that, Gaines.
Yes, the Gaines family.
Okay, they, his wife lived down here, one of them.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Had she been from that period of time, the 50s, or was she more recent than...
No, she probably was older, you know.
Okay.
The two brothers that owned that laundry.
Do you know her full name, by chance, something Gaines, what...
No, I don't write off hands. I could look at the telephone book.
Oh, okay. If you wouldn't mind, because I'd like to talk. The thing I'd like to do is find somebody, one of those officials from the old slum clearance agency, that can talk to me.
That's gonna be hard to do, bro. Well, I don't know too much. What I know is that he only helped the blacks. See, I've heard old people talk if they needed coal. He would get them cold.
John would?
He would get them. He would try to help them out.
Well, I heard that, like, he ran a grocery store as well as running some alcohol kind of places. But you could go to his grocery, and if you didn't have money, he'd let you run up a tab on him. So, well, I'll turn that off. Thank you very much.